Trees abound in our region, and so do ideas about what to do with them. Cutting them down and turning them into lumber and plywood is still a popular and lucrative pursuit, but there's less industrial forestry over the years, in part to allow forest ecosystems and their inhabitants to recover. Among the many other approaches, the concept of social forestry. Our first guest practices and teaches social forestry, and will do so again for a few days starting later this week. Tom Ward resisted the term permaculture expert. He went instead for permaculture practitioner and social forestry proponent. He's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of a book called Greenward Hoe, Herbal Home Remedies, an Ecological Approach to Sustainable Health, and currently working on a book on social forestry, I understand, as well.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So what attracted you to permaculture in the first place?
I got drafted.
Really?
Yeah. I had started teaching in Laney College in the in Oakland, California in the early 70s, a course called Wild Edible Plants and Woods Lore. I seemed to be stuck in a rut. And then Bill Mollison invented permaculture. So when he first taught his West Coast course in 1982, they called me, and I helped him teach that course. So I was ready.
Now, the basic idea in permaculture is that you do things with the land and rhythm with the land and don't take anything out of it particularly?
Not right away. Observation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then principles, and then patterns. So we have these collections of tools. We have a toolbox, a tool basket, actually, we like to say. And we can use that basket to come into better relationship with productivity on the land. We have, at first, permaculture had some problem with environmentalism because they were preservationists and we're utilitarian.
Uh-huh. Meaning you're actually going to use the land.
Yes. And, of course, this land co-evolved with Native American burning and practices for at least 50,000 years here in the West Coast. And so we actually have an abandoned landscape. I like to say that the forest is sad. It misses us. Where's the singing? Where's the laughing?
Mm-hmm.
It's chainsaws.
So it's more than just management. It's management and people around the forest, too.
I was lucky to grow up in the remnants of a Quaker farming village where we, at every Christian holiday, would actually go out in the forest and bring specific parts of the forest into our home. So we were connected to the forest. And my people have been in the Upper Hudson Valley for 400 years now. So we were people, white people of the land. Then I moved to the West Coast to discover the most intensive horticulture of indigenous people, namely California, Southern Oregon, that's ever been studied. And just in the last few years, some incredible books have come out by women, because the first anthropologists were men. And these women are reporting in, and that's Kat Anderson, Tending the Wild, Nancy Turner, Keeping It Living, Robin Wall Kimmerer, Braiding Sweetgrass, and recently Dow O'Ryan with The War Against Invasive Plants. And so we've had a download in the last 10 years of horticultural detail that is blowing our minds. What was California like? What did it look like? Why did it look like that? And can we get back to that? Because we sort of need to come back into relationship with the landscape because we abandoned it. And now we're in trouble, mainly explosive fire.
Tom Ward's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a permaculturist and proponent of social forestry. We're learning what that's about, and you can learn with us and join the conversation as well at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. In a nutshell, then, what is social forestry?
Putting the people back in the forest, I like to say. We're inventing it. We're reinventing it. And it means if we don't use non-social methods like moon suits and chainsaws, and we work together in crews with hand tools, it's safer. We can cover more products. We're not oriented in a more industrial way. We're more horizontal in how we're working with the forest. And I suppose this might be the most challenging part. How are we going to replace plastic? where are we going to go in a post-petroleum age? We're going to need wood products again. And if we use multiple types of wood products, say charcoal, say baskets, say furniture, say smaller buildings, natural buildings, as we say, then we might find that we live in this place and that we live from this place. I'm thinking of a cottager's co-op. We have all these people with large pieces of land who don't have the time to work the land. And so I'm thinking every one of these McMansions, new homesteads, what might we call them politely, I think they need a cottager, a little small cottage. And actually, there are traditional Oregon laws that we fit into. And this has been difficult because people with money don't trust having what they see as a poor person in a cottage on their land. Junk cars, I've heard, things like this. However, our cottagers would be certified and belong to a cooperative, and so I'm working on that idea.
We should be clear on certified. Certified sustainable or certified permaculture? Or,
yeah. Oh, now don't say sustainable too quickly here.
Uh-huh.
Sustainable means keep on doing what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and persistence means survival. I think we're at a persistence moment. I think we should just dump sustainability.
Dump it in what sense? I mean, not even try for it or go beyond it?
Go beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, move beyond sustainability. Sustainability is not going to save us. And it's not another little canard, I suppose, is, you know, we're not here to save the planet. We're here to save the human species.
All right. So when you talk about getting products out of the woods in addition to wood itself, it sounds like what you're talking about is wildcrafts, but on a much larger scale. I mean,
yes.
A lot of different components from the forest.
Yes. Yeah. And all of those components taken in an ecologically continuous and sustainable, I almost said it,
whoops,
persistent way. And that takes science. So monitoring is a big part of social forestry. I'm not quite a Luddite. I really would like to have up-down satellite link in the field for monitoring so that I can see what's going on. One of the big problems with carbon exchange systems is measuring carbon retention in forests, what's called carbon sequestration. This is tough. Hardwood, Southern Oregon forests, we probably actually break even. In order to actually sequester net carbon, we're going to have to work at it. We're going to have to think real hard, and we're going to have to monitor the situation. The only people that are getting carbon credits right now are specific clones of cottonwood and alder, and they don't count removing the original forest in order to plant the plantations to get this measurable carbon uptake, so they're not doing a complete assessment.
So are the forests not carbon sinks now? Is that what you're saying?
Net carbon sinks, except on the coast. It's an interesting – the closer you are to the coast, the more fungal decomposition, the more carbon sequestration. The further from the coast, drier and drier till the east of the Cascades, fire does nutrient turnover. Nutrient turnover, I'm talking minerals instead of carbon. And we have some very difficult soils on the west side of the Cascades, really old soils, really toxic soils with very high pH. We need a lot of carbon in those soils. And we've been exporting carbon, and we've been burning in big piles. We've not been thinking in the big picture about how to keep the carbon, keep it there. And if we can keep the carbon there, we get the water, we get the productivity, we get to thrive.
We are talking about social forestry with Tom Ward here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So give us a few of the tenets and basic practices of social forestry then. I mean, on a given day, what are you going to do to commit social forestry in a forest?
Oh, dear. your household chores. So a big part of deconsumerization is going to be householding, where we start taking care of our families again. So the first thing you do in the morning is your chores. And then you look at the weather, and you have a long list of things you could do. So you make decisions off the cuff based on circumstances. And then you have design. Now, we also teach a permaculture design course, which is the one we're going to start teaching in early February. And that is the basic course before you move on to social forestry. Social forestry is actually an advanced permaculture certificate, and we want everyone, we hope, although we won't exclude anyone, we hope people have some idea of design. And I think as Americans, we've sort of lost that inventive, artistic idea of design, of thinking towards the future in an intelligent way and doing it in a methodology of design. So if you have a design that gives you lists, that gives you an overall picture, you're working on a complex landscape, it's an ecological mosaic, and you decide, oh, today I'm going to cut manzanita logs. I'm restoring an oak savanna so that I can get native grasses back, so that I can burn it more regularly, so that I get higher productivity, higher carbon sequestration, more wildlife, da-da-da-da.
Are there periods when you just leave a forest alone in practices of social forestry?
Absolutely.
For long, long periods?
You know, the Indian burning stopped about 150 years ago, and it was stopped brutally. They were like, don't burn anything. What are you doing? So, but tree ring records show us in the Little Applegate that the fire cycle has been every 20 years. So I think our entry cycle is probably 20 years, just by observation. Mm-hmm. And you can see when you cut down a small tree where the tree rings are, where the fire scars are. And so you can start to think about the periodicity on your landscape.
And so you're actually practicing this. This is not just theoretical. You're actually doing this up at Wolf Gulch Ranch?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 15 years now.
And how big a plot of land?
Well, the ranch itself is 160 acres, but I'm concentrating on the 40 acres that are in Little Wolf Gulch. And I probably have impacted only 5 acres intensively so far because of trail building. Instead of roads, having access for hand tools is a smaller proposition. And those trails have what we call stacked functions. They are fire breaks, they are water collection devices, they are animal corridors, they're located very carefully, namely just off contour on what are called key lines that are an aspect of the landscape where there's points in a gully and ridges where there's pads. On the ridge pads, I have my charcoal operations. So the products I'm selling so far are ear cuffs made out of white oak, which are an ecotopian marker. I know the white oak is the most implicate species on this landscape. It has more ecological relationships than any other tree. And the white oak is the most sacred tree for the Celts. So in a way, the Native American and the European come together, and that's another aspect of social forestry we're combining.
We have a question here from Boyd in Wolf Creek by email. He says, the largest landowner in the region is public, federal, state, county, city, etc. What are examples of best projects on public lands?
Loma Katsi.
Uh-huh.
Loma Katsi Restoration, in their moon suits with their chainsaws, are doing heroic work. And they have come up fast. They've really scaled up, as they say in the corporate world. Actually, you know, the big parts of land that are being hammered are private. There was 500,000 acres of forest cut on the Green Springs. Nobody said a thing.
500,000, you said?
Yeah.
Over what period of time?
It was about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
It was a couple of junk bond forestry companies, turnovers.
Liquidating assets?
Liquidating assets, standing assets. So your standard corporate spreadsheet is not an ecological mosaic.
So the issues are not so much with the private land as the public land, you're saying?
I think it's a whole landscape issue, and I think
not so much with the public land as with the private
land.
I got that backwards.
Yeah. I think it's actually with rethinking how we're looking at the land, we should be looking at watersheds. And in Britain and the rest of the world, a watershed, of course, is the ridgeline. So drainage basin is the better word. And indeed, Oregon governors in the past have encouraged watershed councils, which I was very excited about. And some of these watershed councils are persisting. Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful information collecting community involvements.
When you say, so you were talking about hand tools. So you're talking about a chainsaw-free forest in the ideal version of social forestry?
Especially when you have a crew on board. I might go out by myself or one other person and do specific chainsaw work. Oh, my, you can get a lot done with a chainsaw. But I use almost the smallest chainsaw because I'm, like, taking out manzanita. I'm, like, crawling through bush. So I'm not using huge equipment. Now, there are really good hand tools, the Japanese hand tools, the pole saws, the logging saws. I can actually get a lot done with hand tools. I'm not that impressed with chainsaws.
So where can people go if they want to find out more about social forestry as we get down to our final seconds here?
Yeah, actually, they go to our website, siskiyoupermaculture.com, and they read articles, and that's how they learn. Start to put it together and take some walks. Learn your local plants. Get excited about your butterflies and your wildflowers.
And you can tell Tom Ward is already. Tom Ward is a permaculture practitioner and teaches the tenets of social forestry. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.